Hi, I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, and I want to tell you a little bit about myself before we get started. I have a bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Florida, a master's degree in education from Armstrong Atlantic State University, and a doctorate in education from Georgia Southern University. I'm a certified clinical hypnotherapist, a member of both the American Board of Hypnotherapy and the National Guild of Hypnotists, and I'm president of the American Alliance of Hypnotists. I'm the director of the Steve G. Jones School of Clinical Hypnotherapy. I also serve on the board of directors of the American Lung Association in Los Angeles. I have over 2 decades of experience in hypnotherapy, and I still maintain a busy practice and teaching schedule because I see clients and teach classes worldwide. My client base consists mainly of people who want to lose weight, stop smoking, or gain confidence. Other clients include sales teams interested in boosting motivation and increasing income. Also, singles looking for love, insomniacs desiring proper sleep, and actors desiring more confidence for their next audition. When I travel to see clients and teach hypnotherapy certification classes around the world, I visit such places as Tokyo, Japan, Barcelona, Spain, Paris, France, London, England, Montreal, Canada, Los Angeles, California, and New York, just to name a few. By the way, since you have an interest in hypnosis, perhaps you'd be interested in becoming a certified clinical hypnotherapist. It's very easy to do. All you have to do is go to my website, betterlivingwithhypnosis.com, and click on Hypnosis Classes at the top. You can either train in person or online. After your training, you'll be added to our worldwide directory of certified clinical hypnotherapists, and you'll receive a certificate. I was fortunate for many years to have my office in Beverly Hills, California, where I worked with such wonderful people as Tom Mankiewicz, the writer of Superman, Geraldine Saunders, the writer of The Love Boat, and many other celebrities. I have been interviewed on CNN, Fox News, and appeared on True TV, in addition to having my own hypnosis TV show. With my over 20 years of experience, I'm happy to share with you techniques that I've both developed and learned which can help you improve your life. I encourage you to visit my website, betterlivingwithhypnosis.com. There you will find my life's work, 22 books on hypnotherapy, over 3,000 hypnosis recordings available as downloadable MP3s or CDs, and these recordings will program your mind to achieve goals in such areas as weight loss, motivation, and stopping smoking. I also have audiobooks, such as this one, where I'm talking with you and sharing with you in a very dynamic way techniques that you can use to improve your life and the way you do things. The reason I'm telling you all of this is not to impress you, but to impress upon you that I, your teacher, am very capable and I know what I'm talking about. I'm also very happy for the opportunity to share this information with you, so rest assured that you're in good hands and let's have some fun as we now expand your knowledge. I wish you well in all of your endeavors and please be sure to visit my website, betterlivingwithhypnosis.com. Welcome to the program that's going to teach you about body language, both being aware of your own body language and being able to read other people's body language. It's interesting to think that most of our communication is nonverbal. Over 70% of what we convey to somebody else and what other people convey to us is nonverbal. It has to do with how we say things and how our body moves, not necessarily with what we're saying. So most of the information that you convey to someone is done unconsciously. It's done without you even being aware of it usually. So you need to start becoming aware of it. This program is going to help you observe what you've been doing and help you change in the future so that you can be more congruent. Because if your words are saying one thing and your body's saying another, that registers subconsciously with the other person. So one of the advantages of this program is that you're going to be able to get everything in line. What you say and what you do will be the same thing. But you're also going to be able to realize when people don't mean what they say. Sometimes their words say one thing, but their actions say something completely different. Here are some examples of what your body may be telling other people and what other people's bodies may be telling you. When people are thinking deeply about something, their head usually rests on their hands or their fingers. When people are feeling upset, their head usually hangs low. Now realize as I go through this brief list, just to introduce you to body language, that most of these things are intuitive. Remember the statue of the thinker? The thinker's head is on his hands. He's got a fist, basically, that he's resting on. And when people are upset, they tend to slouch. They tend to walk with their head held down. They tend to cast their eyes downward. Positive people, on the other hand, who feel good about themselves, tend to be quite the opposite. Good posture and looking up. And they tend to be a little bouncy when they walk. People who are feeling excited or elated or just feeling really good about themselves often stretch their arms out and take a deep breath. That would be the posture of someone who's just won something, won the lottery, for example, or won a sports game, or maybe their team just won a game. People who feel uncertain or unsure of a situation or of themselves tend to touch themselves as a way of comforting themselves, crossing their arms, perhaps rubbing their foreheads, touching their mouths with their fingers. These gestures comfort them. What about crossed legs or crossed arms? What do they normally indicate? Well, intuitively, as you may very well know, they indicate that you are holding back something. It's the same thing with your lips pressed closely together. You're holding back something. You're almost stopping yourself from speaking with your lips pressed tightly together. So arms crossed, legs crossed, a hand or finger in front of your mouth, all of those things indicate that you're holding back, either holding back speech or protecting yourself, or both. Here's another very intuitive one. What about when your head is tilted downward and your eyes are looking up towards someone? Sort of like a puppy dog look. This is a pleading look or a vulnerable look. You're almost pleading for mercy for something, somehow, on some level, and or you're feeling vulnerable. Now, people are people, and sometimes they are aware of their gestures to a certain degree, and so they can fake their gestures. They can come up with a gesture that's not really what they're feeling, but they want you to feel that that's what they're feeling. The easiest ones on this list are crying, believe it or not. Crying is actually easy for some people to do in a false way. Frowning, smiling, pretending there's pain somewhere in the body. Now, not every time that you see someone frowning or smiling or holding themselves somewhere as if they have pain, not every time that happens is that going to be fake, of course. But these gestures are very easy to falsify. So don't be misled by someone's body language. Just because they're doing something doesn't mean that they're actually giving you a signal. They could be controlling it, and they could be attempting to trick you. There are also small things that happen, such as nostrils flaring. What does that mean? That indicates anger. Tension around the eyes. That indicates tension of some kind. Could be anger. What about when we feel conflicted? We feel that we're doing something that we probably shouldn't be doing, or we'd rather not be doing it. What do we do when we're feeling that way? Well, we tend to do a number of things. One of the things is stroking our chin. That's right, stroking of the chin can indicate that. Constantly straightening clothes. You know, people who pull their shirt down, make sure it's straight. Constantly doing that. Also tugging at the earlobe. People who reach up and tug at their earlobes are indicating that there's a mismatch. There's something they're doing that they're not really feeling, or they've got a conflict emotionally somehow. Also playing with things. If you ever notice people who just can't seem to keep their hands off of little knickknacks, they have to touch everything and organize things and so forth, there's a conflict inside of them emotionally. Now, in cases in which they're not faking it, in cases in which the body language is not falsified, certain things are indicators. And so let's go over some very obvious ones. What about shrugging of the shoulders? Shrugging of the shoulders can indicate indifference or not knowing something or being embarrassed. Crying, I think that's a pretty obvious one. Crying, of course, indicates sadness, or it could indicate happiness. What about blushing? Usually embarrassment. If you want to control this or control crying, I suggest taking deep breaths and focusing on some object wherever you are. Something on the wall, something on the floor, something on the ceiling. Taking deep breaths and focusing on it. By focusing on that, you can draw your subconscious mind's attention away from whatever it is you're feeling that's causing you to blush or causing you to cry. Now, what a lot of people are interested in is neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. Neuro-linguistic programming was developed by Richard Bandler and John Grinder in the 1970s and 1980s, and it has just grown in popularity. And I think it's important to mention it here because NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, has a lot to do with body language in many cases. NLP is a body of knowledge that allows you to accomplish many things, so it's not limited to body language. But one of the branches of it is very interested in body language, and that is the branch of establishing rapport. Now, if you want to establish ultimate rapport with someone and really get into this, I suggest my Ultimate Conversational Hypnosis Program. It's available at hypnosis2control.com. Hypnosis2Control, all one word, hypnosis2control.com. A very detailed program which goes into body language and so much more. But for our purposes right now, I want you to understand that you can establish rapport with someone by using your body language, just by manipulating your body in certain ways. You can actually create and define yourself through your body language. Because, as we all know, how you present yourself is very important. And it's true that you have just a few seconds to make the first impression. The first impression happens one time. And so you want to make sure that your body language, especially when meeting someone for the first time, especially if it's an important meeting, your body language is showing that you are how you want them to see you. Confident, motivated, smart, intelligent, happy, good, positive. Whatever it is you want to show them, you will convey it more through your body language than the words you use. You can walk into a room and say, oh, I'm very confident. Now, what's somebody going to think of that? Just by hearing me say that, without even seeing me, you know that I'm saying that in a very non-confident way. I'm not very confident when I say it like that. I'm very confident. It just doesn't make any sense. The tone that I'm using is betraying what I'm saying. It's going completely against it. It's going in one direction, and my words are going in the other. And so what happens? It zeroes out. There's no effect. If there's any effect, it sounds like I'm making that up. It sounds like I'm saying something that I don't believe in. You need to make sure that your words are consistent with your actions and with how you deliver your words. One of the best ways to do this is to think of your favorite character. For me, it's James Bond. Not a real person. There are actors who play James Bond, but the character, developed by writer Ian Fleming, is not a real person. The character doesn't exist. Only exists in the imagination of people, thanks to the actors who have portrayed him, and the original books, and even new books that have come out that the original author didn't even write. The character lives on. And from this, the movies and the writings, I can put together a composite idea in my mind of how James Bond would react in any given situation. And if I want to portray confidence, I can act like James Bond. So whether you're male or female, you can choose a character or an actual person, and this can be your role model. What gestures would your character make? How would they sit? How would they stand? How would they walk? How would they react to something? How would they not react to something? By practicing this in front of a mirror and with friends, you can become an expert at being like your character. By exposing your character to many different situations, you can maintain your character in any situation. Eventually, what could happen is that you will be so used to acting like that person or character that you will act like them all the time. So make sure you pick a character you really want to be like. Some people choose characters that really are disempowering. They've chosen a way to stand, a way to sit, a way to talk, a way to act, a way to be that's really disempowering. Why not make a conscious effort right now, a conscious choice, conscious decision right now that you're going to start acting like someone you really look up to? This program is going to require you to not only be aware of yourself, but to be very aware of other people. Because so much of what you do in establishing rapport with someone and getting along and getting what you want and conveying the message that you want to convey, so much of that has to do with paying attention to what the other person's doing. If their arms are crossed, they're resisting something you're saying. Why not change what you're saying? Why not change it up until you see those arms unfold, uncross? Have you ever been in a situation where you're talking to someone and suddenly you stumble upon a topic and their arms fold or their legs cross or they start facing the door? Those are not positive indicators. Those indicate that something has been said, probably, that has rubbed them the wrong way, and they are not only closed up, but if they're facing the door, that means they're ready to leave. You need to change what you're doing, or just let them go. Sometimes people are ready to leave, and that's it. They're just ready to leave, and they need to go. Other times, you can change what you're doing and see the effect that it has. That's nonverbal communication. Your body's communicating with theirs. Your words and the way you deliver them are communicating with their body, and their body's going to tell you whether they're accepting what you're saying or not. If you're delivering a speech to a large group of people and you see a lot of people sitting with folded arms, your message is not getting through properly. So you need to adjust the way that you are delivering your message until you see those arms unfold. Now, if it's a cold room, that doesn't count, of course. But if it's a nice, sunny, warm day and you're delivering a speech and you see people's arms folded, it's time to become concerned and change the way you're delivering your message. One of the concepts that I want to share with you is the concept of kinesics. Not kinetics, not kinesthetics, but kinesics, K-I-N-E-S-I-C-S. And this was developed by Ray Birdwistle. Ray Birdwistle had an idea as an anthropologist that he was going to discover the secrets of nonverbal communication. So this American anthropologist decided that he would look at individual body parts, and he would also look at the body as a whole. Well, later on, Paul Elkman and Wallace V. Friesen came up with five categories that motions could be classified into. And those five categories are adapters, regulators, affective displays, illustrators, and emblems. Adapters have to do with postures that we make without really being aware of making those postures or being in those postures. We can create a posture and do it sort of unconsciously. And we do this to make others more comfortable with us or to accomplish something specifically. Since people aren't really aware of what they're doing when they do these actions, they are very important actions because they're talking to us, they're speaking truth to us about what the person's feeling. These are usually actions such as scratching, touching, or rubbing. But it can also be something such as moving the position of your feet when you're seated or moving your body when you're seated. Now keep in mind that some of these motions may just be happening because the person's uncomfortable. If I sit in a certain position for a long time, I'm going to move out of necessity so that my body is more comfortable. So adapters, although they can be communicative, they can give information, sometimes they're just happening. So as Freud said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Sometimes an adapter is just a movement. So I want you to free yourself from reading something into every little thing that people do. Realize that sometimes people just do things. But adapters have been pinpointed as potential truth tellers when it comes to what someone's really thinking. So do be aware of them. Next on our list would be regulators. Regulators help regulate the conversation. When you're talking with someone and they use a regulator, that's going to help the conversation to flow along. For example, if you're telling me something, I'm nodding my head yes, that means I understand. I'm regulating the conversation. I'm saying, yes, I understand. Let's go on to the next point. Something else to watch for are affective displays. Affective displays tell us what the person's feeling. This is usually done through a facial gesture, and they can display things such as anger or frustration or love. So when someone doesn't have an affective display, it doesn't mean that there's not emotion going on. It just means they're a little more difficult to read, and you're going to have to look for other things. But some people wear their emotions on their faces. You've heard of people wearing their hearts on their sleeve. Well, sometimes people wear their heart on their face, and you can see everything that's going on if you pay attention. Illustrators. Illustrators just back up what you're saying. For example, I caught a fish this big, and I hold my arms out to show you just how big the fish was that I caught. That's an illustrator. And now we get into emblems. Emblems are probably the most useful and what you'll probably observe most often. Now, there are three emblems that you should be aware of. The first one is the sign of the cuckold. Now, in this particular emblem, your little finger and your index finger are extended forward and your palm is facing downward. So you're sort of making horns. Your two fingers are down over your palm and your thumb is crossing them. Now this can mean different things in different areas. Sometimes it can mean that you're some sort of rock and roll fan. But if you happen to be in Italy and you made this gesture to a man who was married, you're letting him know that his partner has been unfaithful to him. How about the finger? American listeners know what this means. It means exactly what it sounds like. When someone gives you the finger, you know what that means. You may be fascinated to know that anthropologists study the middle finger, but they do. Now, in America, if someone gives you the finger, their middle finger is going to be up. That means they don't like you, and they're angry at you. Now, in Britain, it's more common to hold up the middle finger with its index finger neighbor accompanying it, so to hold up those two fingers, but it means the same thing. What about a closed fist at the end of a raised arm? This is a sign of cohesiveness, of a group being cohesive. So, knowing these different symbols, the different things that people do can be helpful. It's kind of like knowing the parts of a sentence. Knowing when something's a noun or a verb or an adjective or an adverb can really be helpful in understanding the entire sentence because people are putting together sentences all the time non-verbally. So understanding the categories that gestures fall into can really help you follow the conversation that's really going on. Let's take a look at eyes. What do eyes tell you? Well, let's take a look at the wandering eye. If someone's eyes are wandering all over the place, except they're not spending much time on you, that could mean a number of things. One of the things may mean that they want to get out of there. They want to be away from you or away from the situation. It could also mean they're trying to get your attention. Their eyes are rapidly looking around. It could also mean they're just uncomfortable. It could mean they're afraid of confrontation. It could mean that they're submitting to you. Because when you don't look at someone in the eyes, when they're talking with you, it often means that you're submitting to them, you're letting go of your power. And the reason that would express itself in eyes looking around is that they don't feel comfortable around you because of the power difference. What about a sideways glance? Have you ever noticed someone doing that? Someone looking at you out of the corner of their eyes? Sometimes their eyebrows are raised and they're smiling a little bit while they're doing that. Well, this means they're interested in you. So if you want someone to know that you're interested in them, talk to their subconscious minds by doing this, looking out of the corner, looking out of the sides of your eyes, giving them the sideways glance, raising your eyebrows and smiling a little. What about someone who's blinking more often than you feel they should or more often than would be normal for someone to blink? Well, if this is accompanied by a stare, they're just staring at you blankly and blinking, that means that whatever you're saying is boring to the person. But guess what? Them not blinking can mean just the same thing. So any irregular blinking activity should be looked at. What about widening your eyes? Widening your eyes indicates that you have an innocence about you. So if you want to appear to be innocent to someone, widen your eyes. What about lips? Lips can tell us quite a bit about what someone's thinking and can tell others quite a bit about what we're thinking. Tight lips, as I've already mentioned, indicate tension. There's something going on that's really getting to the person. Or perhaps they're tense to the point of being angry. But tense lips also indicate sexual arousal. What about the opposite? What about loose lips? What about people who are just letting their lips kind of hang there and kind of sag? This means that they've let go. They're usually sad, but it can also mean they're just relaxed. What about when people chew on their lips? You ever notice that? People chewing on their lips? This is a sign of anxiety. And this can happen either way. They can chew on their upper lip or chew on their lower lip. It's a sign of anxiety. What about when someone's lips are pursed? Kind of a puckering action. This usually means they disagree with what you're saying. So now you understand how to read the face, and in particular, read the eyes and lips. All right, let's take a little break, and I want to make sure that you're with me, that you're paying attention, and that you're learning something. So what I want you to do right now is, if you're driving and you can pull over, go ahead and do that. If you're not driving, then you can definitely do this. You can take out a piece of paper, and you can write down five things that you've learned so far from what I've said, five things that resonated with you. Now, I want you to keep in mind, they don't even have to be five things that I said. Maybe you got some good ideas from what I said. Maybe I said something and your brain took it and blew it up a million times and came up with all kinds of wonderful, amazing possibilities based on what I said. If that's the case, then feel free to write that down. I just want you to write down five things, whether they came from me or they're just thoughts that came in your head. Five things that have come to you so far, either from me saying them or from you thinking them, as a result of listening to this program so far. So as I'm silent, I'm going to give you ample time now. I want you to write down five things, five thoughts that you have as a result of listening to this program so far. Do this now. Okay, do you have your five things? If not, go ahead and finish them up. Five things, write them down. So I'm going to move forward now. Let's take those five things that you have written down, and I want you to elaborate on them. For example, if you have an insight number one, that I should change blank about myself, whatever it may be, I want you to elaborate on that. Whatever you've written down for point number one, something that's come to you during listening to this program, I want you to elaborate on that now as I'm silent. good. And now I want you to take point number two and elaborate on that. What was the second point that you wrote down, and how can you enhance this idea? I want you to make it real for yourself, because I want you to have, after you finish this program, something you can use. So on point number two, elaborate on it. Consider what you wrote down as point number two, the foundation. Now build a house on it. Go ahead and write down something now as I'm silent. Good. Now you're getting some momentum. Now for point three. Point number three that you wrote down, something that came to you as you listened to this program, I want you to elaborate on point number three as I'm silent. Good. Now take point number four, the fourth point that you wrote down, something that came to you while you're listening to this program. I want you to elaborate on point number four as I'm silent. Great. Last but not least, point number five. Take point number five and elaborate on it as I'm silent. Good. So now you have something that you can take with you after this program. You have those 5 points that you elaborated on, and you can use them after this program's over. So let's continue on with the information now.